All right, buckle up for this deep dive because we've got something special lined up. Imagine, if you will, a role-playing game adventure. But not just any adventure. This one's set in 1939 Gotham City. We're talking mobsters, mysteries, and maybe even a Babylonian demon or two.
Ooh, a Babylonian demon in Gotham. That's a new one.
Right, it's like stepping into a classic film noir. But we're not just watching, we're the stars of the show.
I like where this is going. Using a game as a lens, it's not just observing, it's experiencing.
Exactly. Think of us as players around a table, dice in hand, with a game master guiding us through this dark and twisted tale.
Okay, I'm game. Tell me more.
So the game master sets the scene. It's a rainy night in Gotham, and we find ourselves at the Blue Orchid. It's this once swanky nightclub, you know, but now it caters to the fringes of society.
Ah, the kind of place where secrets are whispered and danger lurks around every corner.
You got it. And Gotham in 1939, that's before Batman was really established.
Oh, so the city's even more raw and dangerous.
Oh, absolutely. The mob families pretty much run the show, and there are whispers of them dabbling in some serious occult stuff. You can practically feel the tension in the air. And then, bam, the game master throws us a curveball. We each receive a blackmail note, summoning us to a derelict warehouse.
Blackmail, huh? That's a great way to hook the players right from the start.
Right. It creates immediate stakes and mystery.
But why a warehouse? Seems a bit, you know, cliche, even for Gotham.
But here's where things get interesting. Just as we're processing the blackmail, the doors burst open, and it's like all hell breaks loose. We witness a mob hit, full on.
Yeah, a mob hit. Okay, this is getting good.
Right. Yellow Funzi, this notorious gangster, guns down Santo Casamento, head of one of the most powerful families in Gotham.
So we're just witnesses. I thought we were supposed to be players, not audience members.
We thought so too. But there's this one detail that really creeps us out, Casamento's blood. It's not normal blood. It's described as having this weird mercury-like quality.
Mercury-like. Okay, that's definitely not your average maw hit. That's a sign of something supernatural going on.
You know it. And suddenly, that seemingly mundane warehouse just became a whole lot more interesting. So naturally, what do? We decide to check out the warehouse. After all, we're players in a game.
A little danger never hurt anyone.
Especially not in Gotham.
And especially when there's a mystery to unravel.
Exactly. So we arrive at this abandoned warehouse. Blankenship Motors, the sign says. It's this creepy, decaying shell of a building. And inside, we find remnants of a ritual. Picture this. A makeshift statue of this supposed Babylonian demon, Ishkarhul. And it's covered in shards of blood-stained glass.
A makeshift statue and bloodstained glass. That's some potent imagery. It's like the game is trying to give us a visual representation of this unholy power.
You're getting it. And the game master really lays on the atmosphere. He describes these creepy fingerprints on the glass shards belonging to some of Gotham's most notorious figures, Patty Banfield, a brutal enforcer for the Green Street Boys, and Renzo Baretti, a shady mob lawyer.
So the game is connecting this demon summoning to the heart of Gotham's criminal underworld. It's like we're being drawn deeper into this web of intrigue.
And then we find something else, a copy of a ritual. But it feels off, like it's been faked to look ancient. And, just to keep us on our toes, the game master reveals a ticking time bomb hidden inside the statue.
A bomb. Classic game master move. Always got to keep the players on edge.
Right. Talk about a ticking clock. But don't worry, we managed to defuse it just in time.
Of course you did. You're seasoned players.
Well, we try. But the bomb really drives home the point. We've stumbled onto something much bigger than we initially thought.
I bet you have. And I can't wait to see where this deep dive takes us next.
Let's find out. So we've got this mystery on our hands, right? And remember those fingerprints on the glass shards? We decide to follow those leads, starting with Patty Banfield, the enforcer for the Green Street Boys.
Makes sense. He seems like the most straightforward lead. Plus, a little good old-fashioned interrogation might loosen some lips.
Exactly. So the game master sets up this hilarious scene. We track Patty to his mother's place.
His mother's place?
Yeah. Turns out this big, tough gangster is a total mama's boy.
Yeah.
And get this, he's complaining about a splitting headache ever since that night at the warehouse.
Interesting. So the ritual might have had some lingering side effects, even for those who claim it was all a hoax.
Right. It adds another layer to the whole thing. And it gets better. We find out that Patty works at this dingy boxing gym during the day. Green Glove Boxing, it's called. So we head over there, ready to confront him.
Confront him at a boxing gym? That's brave.
Well, we're players in a game. We gotta take some risks.
Yeah.
Anyway, the game master paints this incredible picture. The smell of sweat and leather, the rhythmic pounding of gloves against punching bags. You can practically feel the gruff, intimidating atmosphere.
It sounds like something straight out of a classic boxing movie.
It is. And we finally managed to corner Patty. Not an easy feat, let me tell you. He's definitely not the chatty type.
So did you get anything out of him?
We did. He admits to being at the ritual. But he claims he left early. Says he was convinced it was all superstitious nonsense. He even shows us the cut on his palm, where he grabbed the ritual glass, just like the fingerprint suggested.
Even if he's telling the truth about leaving early, his involvement still raises questions. Why participate at all if he didn't believe in it?
Exactly. But he's tight-lipped about the ebony veil. Claims he never saw his face.
So we're left with more questions than answers.
Pretty much.
Oops.
But hey, on to the next lead, right?
Right. Who's next?
Well, remember Renzo Baretti, the mob lawyer? We got a tip that he frequents this swanky Italian restaurant, Mario e Dante's.
An Italian restaurant owned by a mob lawyer. I bet the food is to die for.
Literally. The game master describes the scene. The aroma of garlic and tomato sauce, the low hum of conversation, waiters moving with practiced efficiency. But there's this underlying tension, like, you know, everyone's watching everyone else.
Sounds intense.
It is. And speaking of secrets, remember that safe we found at Yellow Funzie's grandma's house?
The one with the combination lock?
That's the one. Well, it contained a rather compromising photograph of Renzo with a certain lady who was not his wife.
Ooh, blackmail material.
You bet. So we decide to use that to our advantage. We approach Renzo at the restaurant. He's surrounded by his family and a small army of bodyguards.
Bold move.
We're players. We got to be bold. Anyway, we dropped the photo on the table. It worked like a charm. Suddenly, Renzo was all ears. He admitted to being at the ritual, but claimed it was all Sandro Casimiro's idea.
So he's playing the I was just following orders card.
Classic. But he does offer some insights into Casimiro's motives. He claims Casimiro was deeply superstitious, easily swayed by the ebony veil's promises of power and influence.
That fits with the whole film noir theme, right? Desperation and ambition driving people to make dangerous choices.
Absolutely. But even as Renzo is talking, something tells us he's not being entirely truthful. There's more to this story. But before we can press him further, he mentions another participant in the ritual, a smuggler named Herman Manstein, operates down at the docks.
A smuggler. Now, that's someone who might have some answers.
We thought so, too. But instead of just asking him about the ritual, we decide to shake things up a bit.
Shake things up? How so?
We come up with this plan to disrupt Manstein's smuggling ring, hoping to flush him out and force his hand.
Bold move.
High risk, high reward, right?
Mm.
So we pull off this elaborate heist, intercepting one of Manstein's shipments. And boy, does he get mad.
I bet he did.
The game master describes this epic showdown between us and Manstein's goons down on the docks. It's a total free-for-all.
Sounds like a scene from an action movie.
It was. But here's the chilling part. Just like Casimiro, Manstein's blood has that same unnatural mercury-like quality. And we find another copy of that forged ritual on his body.
So the ebony veil is targeting everyone who participated in that warehouse ceremony. But why?
That's the million-dollar question. And just when we think things can't get any weirder, we receive a message from the Ebony Veil himself.
The Ebony Veil is reaching out to you.
Yeah. He's playing mind games, taunting us, claiming that the looking glass shatters tonight. And he invites us to witness the true power of Ishkarhol. He even gives us a phone number to call for the location of this grand finale.
A phone number. It's obviously a trap.
Oh, definitely. But we have to go, right?
Of course. It's our chance to finally confront the Ebony Veil and uncover the truth behind this whole demon-summoning mess.
Exactly. The Game Master has set the stage, and we're ready for the final act. So we've got this phone number, right, from the Ebony Veil.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to ignore it. It's like a dare, a challenge.
Wow. Yeah, you got to take the bait.
So we dial the number, and the voice on the other end, it directs us to, wait for it, the abandoned Gotham Cathedral.
The cathedral.
Yeah. Talk about cliche, right?
Well, it's cliche for a reason. Gotham Cathedral is practically a symbol of the city's decay, you know?
Yeah.
A place where faith has been eroded by corruption and darkness.
That's a good point. It's the perfect setting for a final showdown. And the Game Master knows it. He describes this crumbling Gothic architecture. Stained glass windows depicting biblical scenes, all covered in grime and cobwebs. And this faint smell of incense lingering in the air. Like a ghost of forgotten prayers.
Wow.
It's creepy, but also kind of beautiful, you know?
Yeah, I get it.
And then, to really amp up the creep factor, the Game Master starts playing this eerie organ music in the background.
Oh, I bet it's Bach. This game master has a thing for classical music.
You know it. It is Bach. Add the whole other level to this demon summoning thing, right?
Yeah.
So we cautiously enter the cathedral, and there they are, the remaining ritual participants, all huddled around this massive antique mirror.
The looking glass.
I guess so. They've got their nervous bodyguards with them.
Yeah.
And standing at the organ, playing that haunting music, is none other than Sebastian Nocturne, the creepy glass worker. The Ebony Vale's right-hand man.
Nocturne at the organ. That's just perfect.
Right. And the tension is thick enough to cut with a knife. And then the Ebony Vale makes his grand entrance. He appears from behind the mirror in a cloud of smoke, wearing a long cloak and this creepy tin mask.
A tin mask. That's interesting.
Right. It dehumanizes him, makes him seem more like a symbol of fear than a real person.
Like a phantom.
Exactly. He starts ranting about Ishkarhul, calling him the Mirror Eternal, saying how he's about to emerge from the mirror to grant his deepest desires. But there's something about his voice, this edge of desperation.
Like he's trying to convince himself as much as you.
Yeah, like he's losing control.
It makes sense. He's lost control of the situation, all those deaths, the escalating chaos. He's on way over his head.
Totally. But before we can call him out on his bluff, he points at us.
Yeah.
Accuses us of being the real villains, disrupting his plans, killing his associate.
Classic manipulation tactic. Divide and conquer.
Exactly. He's trying to turn the others against us. And for a moment, it almost works. Some of these guys are ready to draw their guns.
So what do you do?
Well, we're not just mindless players, right? We can choose how we respond. We decide to go for the diplomatic route.
The diplomatic route.
Yeah. It's dense, but we managed to convince the others that we're not the enemy, that the Ebony Vale is the one who's been pulling the strings all along.
Nice.
But just when it seems like the Ebony Vale scheme is falling apart, he does something totally unexpected. He lunges at Augustus Van Dorn, the owner of Gotham Glass, and stabs him with a rapier.
He kills one of his own.
Yeah. It was a shocking moment.
But why?
We realize later that it was all part of the ritual. Van Dorn's death, along with the deaths of Casimeno and Manstein. It completes some twisted pattern.
Oh, wow.
And as soon as Van Dorn breathes his last, things get really crazy. The cathedral starts shaking, these massive bells start clanging like crazy, and a ghostly white portal opens up high above us.
A portal?
Yeah. It was intense.
So what comes through? Is it Ishkarhul?
Not quite. Three spectral beings descend, their forms shifting and shimmering, like ghosts made of smoke and glass.
Ghosts of smoke and glass. That's terrifying.
They were terrifying. And floating between them is this strange arc, an otherworldly construct that seems to defy the laws of physics, constantly folding and unfolding.
What is that thing?
We later learn that these beings are called the bearers of the ever-shifting vault, and they've been drawn to Gotham's corruption, its history of darkness and violence.
So the ritual did work.
Yeah. But not in the way the Ebony Vale intended. He summoned something far more powerful and dangerous than a Babylonian demon.
That's what happens when you mess with forces you don't understand.
Right, and the Ebony Vale, he completely freaks out, tries to bargain with the bearers, then he tries to pry open the Ark himself.
Bad idea.
You think. The Ark's energy blasts him, turning him into solid glass, and then he shatters into a million pieces.
Wow. Talk about instant karma.
Right, so now it's up to us to figure out what to do with these bearers and their creepy arc.
The fate of Gotham rests on your shoulders.
No pressure, right? And just when we need him most, Batman shows up.
Batman.
Yeah. But even he seems a bit outmatched by this whole supernatural situation.
Well, he's a detective, not a demon hunter.
Right. He does what he can, taking out a few stray mobsters and distracting the bearers. But ultimately, he leaves the final confrontation to us.
It's your time to shine.
So one of our players notices this smaller version of the Ark.
Mm-hmm.
Within the larger one, it's like a key or a control panel.
Uh-huh. So you just need to figure out how to use it.
Exactly. It's a long shot, but it's our only hope. The Game Master describes this intense scene where our player is trying to manipulate this miniature Ark, focusing their willpower, trying different combinations.
But it's down to the wire.
It was, but finally they figure it out.
Yeah.
The larger Ark implodes, taking the bearers with it. The portal closes. The cathedral is left in ruins, and Batman disappears into the night, leaving us to ponder the strange events we've just witnessed.
What a ride. This deep dive has been amazing. A mix of classic noir, supernatural horror, and role-playing adventure.
It really shows how powerful games can be. They transport us to other worlds, let us experience the impossible, test our limits, and face our fears.
It makes you...
It does. What would we do if we faced a threat beyond our comprehension? Would we be brave enough to step up? to make those tough choices, to fight for what's right?
That's a question worth pondering.
It is.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, stay curious.
You keep a set of dice handy.